I am an experienced designer and a Swiss Army knife who creates unforgettable moments. A lot of life and energy. This year, our MC, he has, in the last year, started writing a lot of new songs, and particularly rap songs. Well, he introduced our three of our four main speakers by writing a rap song for them and rapping it for the audience. I don't think I've ever heard that done at a conference before, and people loved it. The process for planning a virtual event is very similar. And so distraction is like one of your biggest enemies. And the temptation to stay isolated is also because, you know, very likely people are multitasking if it's a virtual event. So one of your biggest advantages is the same thing I'll say about community: get people engaging quickly.
Okay. What's your greatest joy?
My wife.
Hello, fellows. Welcome to the next episode of Jagged with Jasravi. Conversations that ignite new ideas with thought leaders from the branding, marketing, and the business world. Hello, Phil. Thrilled to have you on my show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you and talk to someone on the other side of the globe. That's really fun.
Yeah, day and night.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Phil, if I requested you to tweet your profile, what would you say?
I am an experienced designer and a Swiss Army knife who creates unforgettable moments.
Unforgettable moments. Okay. How difficult is it to create a memorable experience?
So we are in competition with experiences and ideas and brands constantly. You know, whether you're on the internet or the highway, there's always something that's vying for your attention. And so trying to stand out in that noise is very, very challenging. That's 100% true. But I think creating memories is different because memories have an emotional connection. They have a physical connection. You're using all the senses. So it becomes incredibly personal. And a memory doesn't necessarily have to be the most incredible thing that you've ever seen or done. You don't have to spend thousands of dollars to go on a cruise or to go to a Disney property to create a really valuable memory that's going to last. It could be a conversation like this. Like if you and I enter this conversation with great intention and we're really focused and present to the conversation, this could be a very memorable moment for us and anyone who's listening if you give yourself to it and we ignite something that's more than just ideas, but we make it personal and it becomes transformational. So I think that's the difference of creating something that's memorable is if we can make it hyper-personalized, give people the opportunity to enter in and make it their own and create the space for that. That's different than branding. Branding is we're trying to get you to notice us, you know, notice me, notice this, notice that. That is part of branding. That's part of marketing. Of course, we're doing that. But when you get the chance and someone has now given you their time, you know, they walk through the door, whether it's a physical or a virtual door and say, okay, I'm coming to your website. I'm coming to your event. I'm coming to this experience. Now you have the chance to help them create a memory that causes the learning, if it's a learning event, to go deeper or whatever the experience is. It might be a concert. You know, a concert could become totally memorable or it could become noise. I went to a concert last year and I didn't know that I was having ear problems until I went to this concert. And two songs into the concert, I left holding my ears. It wasn't the concert's fault. It was the fact that COVID had ruptured my eardrum and I didn't know it. And so, you know, it was a terrible experience. But everybody else who was there probably absolutely loved it. But my personal memory of that event was I never want to go back to that venue because I associate the venue with that awful memory.
Memory, getting into the memory or becoming part of the memory structure is what we're going to talk about. And you've given us a lot of cues about personalization, about emotions, brands are also trying to get into the memory structure, but they know that they can't just do it with communication. I mean, it will be the product experience and so many other things. So we'll come back to it later. But you talked about the Disney experience.
Mm-hmm.
How this peak moment, the peak experience, how important is that? And how does Disney do that? And what can marketers learn from that?
So there's a book called The Power of Moments that is a seminal work that everyone who's listening to this should read. It's by Chip and Dan Heath. They're professors at Stanford. And they did a deep dive into how peak moments work at Disney. So I'm quoting their work as I say this, but my own experience definitely factors in. So what they did is they did this survey of people who were attending Disney theme parks, and they asked them to rank on a scale of 1 to 10 different experiences that they had throughout the day. When they first got to the park, when they went and bought their first Coke, when they went on their first ride, when they watched the parade, when they, you know, were doing different things. And what they noticed is the scores were all over the map. You know, people were honest and they were giving things like standing in line to buy a Coke in the middle of the hot afternoon. They were giving that like a 2 or 3. But watching the parade was like an 8 or a 9. Going on their favorite ride was like a 7 or an 8. But then at the end of the event, as people left the park, they said, give us a score of your overall experience. And inevitably, people were given the overall experience an 8 or 9. It didn't add up. You know, you look at all the scores they gave everything during the day, it should have been an average of maybe 5 or 6, but they gave it an 8 or 9. And that's because those peak moments outweighed all the negative experiences they had during the day. And Disney is incredibly strategic about where and when to create those peak moments. You know, the fireworks show they do at the end of the night with the parade is worth the wait. You know, waiting for it and going and getting a place on the side of the sidewalk and waiting for 2 hours, that's miserable when you've got people saying, hey, you can't have that spot. We've been waiting here too. Like, I've had this happen. You know, it's not fun waiting for it, but once it comes, you forget all that stuff. I actually just saw this at our conference that happened 2 weeks ago. Our first day, our registration lines got really long for about 30 minutes. And some people were having to wait in line for 20 or 30 minutes, which that's not our standard. We want you in line for less than 5 minutes, but everyone comes at once. We had some technical issues, but on our debrief scores, that's hardly talked about. They all talk about how great the conference was, the content, the connections, the parties, all the things that you would hope. And so again, if you focus on the peak moments, the things that really matter to people, it will outweigh the negative things, some of which are inevitable. Standing in line at Disney buying a Coke that's too expensive on a hot, humid day, that's just part of the deal. That's what you paid for. You paid for the opportunity to spend too much money on food. But if all the other things are really good, you have that great chance moment with your favorite Disney character. That's like that surprise and delight moment that all of a sudden nothing else matters. The kid stops crying. They're smiling. They're laughing. They're happy. Parents are happy because the kid's smiling and happy. Then all of a sudden they don't remember the stuff that was bad. And certainly 3-5 weeks later, they're not remembering the negative stuff unless it was really personally painful. Mm-hmm. I saw a feedback this morning of someone who tried to sing karaoke at one of our parties. And that's like one of the pinnacle experiences at our event because they get to perform with a live band and they're singing songs. So it's not true karaoke. They're singing with a band. They're getting to be a rock star. Well, this lady had been waiting in line for 2 hours to sing her song. And when it came her turn, some drunk guy decided to go up and sing the song instead of her. And so she complained about it. And for her, that was a painful moment. It's like, I was so looking forward to that. That was my moment. And here's this guy who's had too much to drink. He took my moment away. Well, she probably won't forget that because that's a negative experience. But overall, if we focus on peak experiences that people can have with us, they will forget most, if not all, of those negative experiences. And that will that allows it to become more memorable in the positive sense. You know, we don't want unforgettably bad memories. Like, you know, we don't want unforgettable moments in that sense, which they happen and they're at some level, they're unavoidable, but we definitely want the unforgettably good moments.
So within the entire experience, there are some moments that are very, very positive, delightful, and that can define how that entire experience is stored in the memory and how you know it's looked at in retrospect. I think that's why we go for second or third child also, because they just forget the painful memories. They just remember the beautiful experiences. But yeah. is there strategically, where should it be placed in the entire journey? Is there any viewpoint there? Should it be towards the
end? You used the right word. You used the exact right word. Is you need to look at your customer journey. And marketers understand a customer journey of what it takes to get someone to buy. Experiences need to understand the customer journey of all the places along the way where, one, where's an opportunity to create a peak experience? And two, where are the places that people are likely to have a negative or a valley experience that we can maybe at least flatten out? So if you can look at the longevity of someone's experience with you, and I would argue someone's experience with you starts at the moment they decide they're coming. So we'll keep with Disney. The moment I, as dad, say, hey, honey, let's go to Disney next March and let's book our tickets now. Mm-hmm. Let's buy that package so we can go. That is when my journey started. It didn't start when I got on the plane. It didn't start when I got on the Disney property. It started then. And in an ideal world, Disney is helping me prepare. Let's say, you know, this is March already. So, but let's say that was September that I made that decision. For 6 months, they have an opportunity to help me prepare for that. But let's be practical. The experience really does start when someone gets on your property, you know, so they drive through and they're parking their car. That's when the experience really does start, you know, even though there's an anticipation that's building. So I'm looking at those moments where can I have the biggest impact on a lot of people? So peak moments for me, I'm looking at those moments. Where do I have everybody gathered together? Also, I'm looking at first experiences. So when they get to the gate of your experience, and that could be a proverbial gate, that is a first experience. That is a moment to create an impression. They're going to their first session. If it's at a conference, this first keynote or a first workshop or a first session, that is a key moment. What's the first opportunity to meet people that they have? Like if you've created some kind of pre-event meetup or orientation session, what is that experience like? I'm trying to orchestrate those things. I'm also looking at the last experience. Most events do not put enough emphasis on the last experience. Like what happens when the final keynote, the final session's over and people are now leaving the event? And I'll be honest with you, we've done our event for 11 years. This is the only year I think we've done it right. We've done semblances of doing it right a couple of times. Like we had an indoor fireworks show 1 year, which was very memorable, but still when they left, it was like a letdown. So this year there was no letdown. This year it was actually one of those moments that people were still grabbing their phones and remembering it. So we're looking at what are those places where you have everyone together. It's a first time that something's happening. And then I'm looking at what are those moments where energy is going to be sagging? So we had a 3-day event, and by the third day, people are kind of getting used to what's happening at the event. Like, oh, I know the routine. I show up. There's going to be a keynote at this time. There's going to be a session at this time. So you disrupt the patterns. You can create new peak moments by disrupting expectations in a good way. So when people arrived, we had a team of about 20 people who had created handmade signs, and they looked like they were picketing the event, like they were out there protesting against the event. If you were watching it from across the street, you assumed they were protesters. But when you got close, you realized that all the signs were things that every social media marketer in the world would agree with. Don't treat LinkedIn like it's a dating app. Don't buy tweets, you know, things like this that were just totally funny, tongue in cheek, and it made people smile. And it wasn't something anybody expected when they walked in the building that day, and all of a sudden became, you know, a peak moment. Is that the most important moment of the event? Absolutely not. But did it change the energy of the day? 100% yes.
Oh, what you're sharing right now is that this understanding of how the consumer is experiencing it, and then you decide what you want to evoke at what point in time. And there's this whole there's a surprise element, perhaps. There's a bit of a delight moment and humor. I guess that's why it works so well, because it always surprises you. It's always a little tangential.
Unexpected.
Unexpected. So this whole, that you also talked about five forces that minimize, that are negative forces from a good experience. What would those be? And how an event is no longer just an event, it's an experience that one is designing for. How this approach is very transformative.
Yeah, well, let's treat those separately because they are two different things. The five forces, and these aren't necessarily all the forces, they worked really nicely into an acronym, DRIED, D-R-I-E-D. And one of the core metaphors in my book, which we'll probably talk about later, is the baking of bread. So if you have dried out bread, unless you're making croutons or feeding the birds, most of us don't like dried out bread. Like, we want it to be fresh. We want it to be moist. We want it to be all these things. And so dried out bread is a negative. Like, you know, you get it in your mouth and you start choking on it. So these are the things that cause event planners to choke. So D stands for dull, boring. Anything that you do that just leaves people flat and, you know, almost non-responsive, that would be dull. R is resistance. So a lot of experiences and events, people are walking in suspicious. You know, 60% of our attendees this year were new. So they're coming in, and a lot of them found the event through Google searches. They didn't necessarily come because someone recommended it to them. So they're coming in like, I think this is the right place to be. All the reviews that I read look good. The marketing is good, but I'm still not sure. Or perhaps they've heard from some people, you know, I heard last year it wasn't that great. I'm not sure, but I'm going to give it a try. So there's a resistance that people are feeling. The I stands for isolation. Our introverts in the world particularly are standoffish, but some people just, when they get into a new situation, they're more likely to be reserved and standing back and waiting to decide, do I want to enter into this or not? And I'm much more comfortable on my phone. And so isolation can be an enemy of engagement at an event. The E stands for exhaustion. So you've probably been to one of these events where the temptation is, there's stuff going on at 6 a.m. I want to go on that networking walk. I'm going to go get that exercise. I'm going to go to that breakfast. And then I'm going to make sure I go to every session that there is. So there's a session at 8 and 9:30 and 10:30 and so forth through the day. Oh, and by the way, there's a dinner meetup happening after the sessions are done. Oh, and then there's a party that goes from 8:30 to 11:30. Oh, and I heard there's an after party party. So I'm going to go to that. And all of a sudden, you've been going from 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. and you do that for 3 days. And you wonder why you're exhausted. I was talking yesterday to a lady who says, I'm a true extrovert. I'm so extroverted. I can't believe that I got worn out, but I realized I can't do it all. It's impossible. I cannot actually do all that. So that's the E. And then the final D is, if you know the movie Up, squirrel, distraction. And social media in particular, that's a huge factor that we have to feed into. Like, if people are on their phones while they're watching a session, doing the event, and they see some trend happening on Twitter, or if it's like yesterday, I don't know when this will post, but yesterday on March 5th, Facebook was out for like 3 or 4 hours, and every social media marketer in the world thought someone hacked their account. Imagine if that would have happened during a social media conference. We would not have been able to hold the attention of the event because everyone's sitting there fearing that someone, not nefarious, entity has broken into their accounts, and now they're going to be charging for ads that they don't want, and they're going to take over all their accounts, and we would not have been able to hold their attention. That would be an extreme example, but distraction could be just as slight as you get a text from your spouse saying, hey, Johnny's sick. I've got to take him to the doctor. Or I got one. My mom, this actually happened. I got a text from my brother saying, hey, mom just fell. She broke her kneecap. We're taking her to the ER. This happened during the event. You think I was distracted? 100% distracted. I'm like, holy cow, do I need to fly to Dallas right now? Is she okay? What's going on? That's happening at events all the time. So how do you pull them back in? So the event planner's challenge is, how do I address each one of those five forces and bring people back into the experience? And if you want to, we can go into some of the strategies there. But the biggest thing I would recommend is know what the forces are that could undermine the experience that you're trying to create, and then have strategies for those things. recognize that some of those happen along that continuum of a customer journey. Some of them just require you to say, you know what, we're not going to be dull. We're going to actually be, and I'm going to forget all the words that I've used, but transformational. We're going to focus on creating transformational moments within the event. We're not going to be resistance. We're going to bring people to a place of accepting and feeling like they belong here. This is their community. You know, we're not going to be isolated. We're going to bring people together. We're not going to be exhausted. We're going to help people feel stimulated and excited to be where they are. And we're not going to be distracted. Instead, we're going to be engaged with one another. And so having specific strategies for each one of those things, I think, can be your friend, because we all know those forces are working against us. But if we design it well, and so that's maybe the answer to your second question, which is, how do we go from traditional event planning to experience planning? And content is still the king. If you're at an educational event, content is your bricks. I'm going to use the example of brick and mortar. If you're building a wall, you've got to have bricks, and they've got to be good quality bricks, or they're going to crumble over time. So they've got to be made the right way at the right temperature in the kiln, the right raw ingredients. Those are your speakers. If you don't select the right speakers talking about the right topics, your event will crumble no matter what you do with all the experience stuff that I'm talking about. And great speakers understand how to create an experience within their talk. So you've got to be coaching your speakers. Hey, you've got 45 minutes. You've got 30 minutes. You've got 90 minutes. This needs to be an experience. And if they're not bringing an experience, either don't bring them or coach them. And we offer coaching, and those who receive the coaching always transform what they're doing. But a brick wall will not stand. If you have great bricks and no mortar, that wall is going to tumble the first time the wind comes or a first earthquake that comes along. So the mortar is the experience, in my mind. That's the stuff that holds it all together. And it's details. And you could say, you know, we put too much emphasis on it, but I don't think if we put emphasis on it enough that the wall will hold together. So it's a cohesive package. So to me, that includes things like your MCs. If you have great MCs, they're creating an experience and they're connecting things together. Like if you're a single track event or if you're multi-track, doesn't matter. Those MCs are a critical player in creating the connection. If you just throw someone up from the hallway and say, hey, would you go read this note card and introduce the speaker? That's a bad experience. I'd rather you not do that. But if you can get a great MC in there who knows how to work the crowd and get people warmed up and connecting with one another, so that when someone gets on stage, now it feels like, okay, this is an event. This isn't just an isolated, you know, content moment. All these content moments are part of something bigger. We're part of the community here. That to me is a critical part of it. And then all the other details that we can talk about with multi-sensory stuff, like, you know, what do you smell? What do you see? What do you hear? What do you feel? What do you taste? All five senses matter. And we have to be strategic. We have to understand who the people are, what the goals of the event are. You can go overboard on some of that, but those are the things that make it memorable. Like science is so strong on this. The senses are the strongest pathway to your memory. And when you stack all five senses together, that is going to be your strongest ally. Of course, it can work against you. If you have a smell, for example, smell is your strongest one. If it's a smell that's offensive, or it's offensive to some, it could actually take people out of the event and make them, you know, worst case, they have an allergic reaction, but it could also just trigger memories that are really bad for people. So you obviously have to be careful, but it can be your biggest ally.
Wow. So much to grasp. And I think experience is a word that is used very casually. I mean, So I'll just go back to one thing that you said, which kind of really puts it in perspective, that content is the brick and the mortar is the experience. The importance of personalization in terms of making it memorable. So when you are choosing your own experience, it's easier. But when you are designing an experience for an audience, so many people, how do you ensure personalization? Because like you say, it's very important to create memorable moments.
Well, we don't know when the memorable moments are going to come for people. You know, what's memorable for me will be different for you. So we're creating space for memory making. We are doing some things that we know, you know, are going to at least get people to smile. But another thing, though, that you're doing in terms of personalization is giving people choices. So how do you want to participate in this, or do you want to participate? You know, when everybody is forced to do everything all together, it's a little tougher. So I think that's part of personalization, is giving people options, like in video games. You know, we want people to be able to choose a path along the way. So, you know, some events that's harder to do because everybody is sort of doing the same thing. But even there, there are options of how you like to learn. Some people learn better by listening. Some people learn better by watching. Some people learn better by doing. Well, if the speakers are mixing up the way they do things, and you're creating space for conversations, because some people like to process out loud, so they want to have a conversation to talk about what they just learned. Other people need some space just to sit alone and journal about what they just learned. Other people are like, hey, give me a place where I can go try it. You know, so if we design events where we allow for the different ways that people learn and engage, then we're allowing for more personalization. And then, you know, if you have a choice of, do I go to this session, or this session, or do I go sit at a table and talk? Do I want to talk about Facebook marketing? Do I want to talk about influencer marketing, or do I want to talk about SEO? Now I have a choice. I can go to the one that I want to do. And, you know, there's options that are provided that are too many sometimes to choose. Like, I want to talk about all of them. There is that, but I think giving people choices overall is a better thing in helping them design their own experience.
This is just the depth of understanding that one needs in terms of how people process things, how giving choice. I mean, this is like a lot of science to it, and a lot of giving space for the unexpected as well, because you know, you can't really define everything, but just knowing this is so empowering that, you know, if you just get into space and what all that entails, physical, emotional, psychological, cognitive, I mean, there's just so much to it. And let's talk about this intentional design that, you've been talking about, and links to how deeply you should be aware of the consumer journey, if you can call it, or the cognitive ways, emotional ways people process. It is, I guess, touching what you just said, but the intentional design, how does it happen and what does it take to be able to do a great job of it? Because, you know, as you were talking at a very basic level, not from the marketer's angle, but I can see that great hosts of great, of very famous parties have this intuitive understanding at times of how to, you know, shape the narrative of the time that people will be there, and, you know, how to allow certain kind of huddles or conversations, and, you know, where will music be, and et cetera. I mean, but now that this is a science, which is, there's a whole investment into it, and there's a perhaps an ROI as well, and it's reached another level. So the intentionality of it, how does it play out? If you could share an example, Phil.
Well, and I'm sure if you got five of us in the room who do this, we might all have different methodologies. I'm not sure if there is a method, but typically for me, it starts with understanding what is the timeline look like. You know, what are the building blocks? You know, some things are a given. Like, we decide very early on, okay, this is a 2.5-day conference. Okay, that becomes a given. What time are we starting? What time are we ending? Are there evening events? Some of those things factor into it that are obviously all things that are part of designing an experience, but you do have to start with that and then ask yourself, how do we build the experience around some of the givens? Like, you know, you talked about space. Somewhere along the way, you decide you're going to do it in this venue. You know, the venue has a lot to do with the experience that you create. You know, if it's in the middle of a cornfield somewhere, or if it's on a beach, or if it's on a mountain or by a lake or whatever, there's possibilities and there are distractions with every venue that you create, and things that you have to overcome, and things that the venue does for you. You know, you also have to understand, you know, an event, if we were to plan an event in Mumbai versus in San Diego, there's things that would be very different about the event. And there's other things that'd be very similar. You know, if you knew the primary audience was going to be Indians coming from, you know, all over Southeast Asia or something versus mostly North Americans, there are cultural things that we have to factor in, you know, in terms of what expectations are and how close do we sit together and what kind of seating is appropriate and what kind of food. So you have to start with your audience. You have to start with what are the goals of the event. You have to start with what are some of the givens. You know, we've learned some things over time about spacing of the schedule. So we used to do sessions much more back to back with only 15 minutes in between. And we've learned we need 30 minutes, not just because there's technical things that need to happen in that 30 minutes to get ready from speaker to speaker, but people need space. They need space to have a conversation. They need space to go get a breather. They need to go grab a cup of coffee or a snack or visit the restroom or whatever it might be. It gives them time that they can recalibrate and get ready. And, you know, it means we can't do as much content, because if you had 15-minute breaks, we could probably pack a couple more sessions in per day. But that 30-minute has become a non-negotiable for us, because we realize people need that much time, and it's a good thing. So there's not an easy way to answer your question, because it's an iterative process, but we're asking questions along the way of where are people likely going to fall off? What does the contour of this look like? You know, we know some peak moments. We know that first workshop that they go to on Sunday, that first keynote that they go to, that last keynote that they go to, the lunchtime when they're having a chance to sit down and have conversations, even that morning when they show up and they don't know anybody and they're perhaps standing in line at registration. Like, how can we turn that from being a negative experience into a positive experience? And we did it this year by creating some meetups. We had hundreds of people show up 2 hours early to go to a meetup, which took some pressure off of registration, which was one of our goals. But another one of our goals was, hey, if 60% of the people don't know anybody, then let's give them a chance to come and meet a few people so they can go to sessions together and plan their event together. And that's exactly what happened. And it was even better than we expected. So those are a few thoughts. We have diagrams and spreadsheets and all kinds of tools that we use for this, but it does become very granular and detailed along the way. But I think it starts with a high level view of what does the overall experience look like? Let's put those building blocks in place. Let's look at what those key peak moments are. What are the places within there that there's potential for it to be a negative and people might leave? Mm-hmm. And let's make sure we have things there that will keep them around or bring them back. You know, if they go off property, let's say, to go grab lunch, let's give them a strong enough reason to come back.
Mm-hmm. And across, as you were talking, you were also taking care that the dried is not at play. The resistance starts breaking from the registration, state as well. And that's brilliant, because just knowing all this, you know, can really empower the design and bring so much more intentionality to the whole thing. Guys, you should grab the book, which we'll talk about at some point in time for final details. Now I'm going to, yes. It's a very unforgettable name somehow, Phil.
Somehow. Even with an elephant on the cover.
Yeah. Okay. It's the memory that we're referring to?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So Phil, you know, when you were talking about that experience, that movie, and how that experience made you realize something, and I would say that this kind of a realization is almost an awakening, because before that you could never see it, and then after that you could see it. It's like really such a powerful experience, right? So it comes from a certain place, you know, from the creator, from the artist, that it can convey that kind of, it can evoke that kind of powerful impact. Removing that, I just had to say something about that because it's playing on my mind. Is it linked to how you describe that authenticity is very important? And also, I would just say two, three things so you can, you know, respond. I'm just looking at the time as well. And then you've talked about awkwardness as well, embracing awkwardness and how personalities can embrace it. So if you could share examples, how you do it, so people relate to it, how these two things play and what is the importance?
Well, just to go back to the theater experience for a second, it's one example that I share of this idea where time stands still. You've probably had this happen in your life where events and circumstances are orchestrated where you're in this moment where it feels like nothing else matters at that point in time. And that musical did that for me. And I originally, when I was writing my book, I thought, I want to figure out how to make that happen. That's so cool and powerful. And every event we go to, if we could create those kind of powerful moments for people, our events would definitely stand the test of time. They'd be highly memorable. But what I learned from talking to the artistic director of that musical, he said, well, here's the deal, Phil, is that was the moment that stood out for you. But if I were to pull 100 people, I'll bet they had different moments that stood out for them. And if you came back 7 times, you might have a different moment every night. So my job is to tell a really good story and make it accessible for you and eliminate all those distractions. So I don't know if you've ever been to a theater or musical performance where a door opens, light comes in, and all of a sudden your mind's eye goes over there. I will never forget going to see Hamilton, the musical. It was on the road and I was there. And at some point in the first act, someone, I call her a lady because I don't know if it's a man or woman, but someone pulled their phone out and decided that it was a really good idea to take a picture with flash in the middle of the first act. Well, my mind and my eye went there and I start wondering, is an usher going to come in and take her out? Is someone going to go and correct her and make sure she doesn't do it again? And, you know, I'm thinking all this. Thankfully, it was such a great musical that normally it takes 15 minutes for your mind to refocus when you get distracted. But it was such a good musical. In less than 5 minutes, I was refocused, had forgotten about her until after the show was over. I love telling the story about her because it's a great example of how we get distracted. I'm forgetting the second half of your question. Oh, the awkwardness.
Awkwardness and the authenticity.
Oh, and authenticity. Yeah. I mean, that's the word of the day, right? That's a buzzword. Everyone wants to be authentic. I think it's very similar to the idea of awkwardness. And I would maybe not choose the word awkwardness. I probably did somewhere sometime. Otherwise, you wouldn't have picked up on it. But I would say uniqueness. Lean into your uniqueness, your unique skills, your unique abilities. So, you know, one of mine is I'm a musician. So I was talking yesterday to our main event MC, and I was talking to our show caller on our production team. And the show caller said, your conference is the only place I've ever been where it feels like I went to a music festival and a educational conference broke out. And I said, well, that's a really funny way to describe what it is. But as a music guy and a former worship pastor, of course, there's going to be music and we lean into that. It's like what makes us different. And some people show up and they don't know that's what we do. And they're like, I don't like that. Well, okay, then this conference maybe isn't for you, or, you know, just move past those moments. But most people love that we write a unique theme song every year and all the performers are part of the community. So that's authentic because we're saying, who are we? Who is this community? What are the unique abilities and gifts of people within this community? We don't want to just put on another educational show that feels dry and boring. We want to put something on that has a lot of life and energy. This year, our MC, he has in the last year started writing a lot of new songs, and particularly rap songs. He's a biology teacher and he writes rap songs on biology. Well, he introduced our three of our four main speakers by writing a rap song for them and rapping it for the audience. I don't think I've ever heard that done at a conference before, and people loved it. But he was being himself. Like if I did that, actually, I If you look it up, I did try doing that a long time ago, and the internet hated it. I got so hated on. The video went viral, and it's I learned I should probably shouldn't rap on stage. That's something I should keep to myself. But he instead, is a decent rapper, but he was doing it with a very specific intention that people understood. So like everyone understood why he was doing what he was doing. He told me, like, I put rap songs up about biology, and I always get haters on those on YouTube because YouTube has no problem sharing their opinion. But because this was, hey, everyone, you need to know Andrew Davis. This is what's great about Andrew, and he goes into this rap song about doppelgangers and all this kind of stuff. People loved it. So he again was leaning into what makes him unique.
Unique.
Our other MCs is feels like you're watching a boxing promoter. I don't know if you know American boxing, but the guys who promote the boxers are like over the top hype. This guy is that. He's a hype man. He makes you feel like you're at a wrestling match, or he's getting the crowd just all riled up and all excited. Most of our MCs can't do that. And if they tried to, it would feel inauthentic. But if I asked him to not do that, that would be inauthentic. So I think it's giving permission to be who they are, how they do it, and on the reverse side for the attendee saying, look, this year we acknowledge that 20% of people have some form of neurodivergence. And so bright lights and loud sounds can be a problem. So we said, you know what, if that's an issue for you, let us know and let us know how we can help you. We learned a lesson. We probably need to bring earplugs next year for some people, because what's loud to not loud to me might be loud to somebody else. And bright lights for some people were bothersome. So we had a different place where they could sit, where they didn't have to sit through some of those experiences and still enjoy the benefits of the event.
Understood, understood. One, I want to know, how do you take this to virtual experiences? Because like we're doing this online, a lot of events have become online or hybrid. How do you take some of these learnings to designing an experience online? Then I want to know, how do you do this for communities, whether it's offline or online? Mostly because it's so tough. It's so tough to have an engaged community because I mean, that whole issue about how much will you control, how much will you not control, what will be the objective, what will bring people together, et cetera, et cetera. So many issues to it. But if you could just touch upon the most important thing that people miss. And I also want to know, why is it so important for people to have this experience where time becomes still, where time stands still? That is so powerful for a human experience where something beyond the physical senses is going on, right?
Clearly, we're going to have to do another conversation because that's going deep into
Okay,
this.
you can choose two of these three. How about that?
Well, and I'll say this. I think the process for planning a virtual event is very similar, but you're having to just take into account that your audience is online. And so distraction is like one of your biggest enemies. And the temptation to stay isolated is also because, very likely people are multitasking if it's a virtual event. So one of your biggest advantages is the same thing I'll say about community: get people engaging quickly. So if you're building a pre-event community, I get some ambassadors into the group who are starting to engage with everybody that comes in as soon as they come in. Because if people start engaging right away, they'll keep coming back. If they come in and it's a dead community, or if they come to a virtual session and there's really no engagement happening, you're setting a queue. So you want people to have a reason to engage within the first minute or two when they come on into the call. So you've got to have a strategy for engaging right away. Similar things happen at a conference, like you want to get people talking to each other sooner than later. The sooner you start making friendships, the easier it is to keep making friendships. If you wait till 2 days into the event to start meeting people, you're way less likely to do it, especially if you're reserved and introverted. As far
Got
as time standing still goes, transcendent is a really great word for that because it's not something that happens every time. I can probably count the number of times in my life where I could say that was a time standing still moment or a transcendent moment where I'll never forget it. One of those was in the presence of the most beautiful sunset I've ever seen, where it's so inspiring, it caused me to dance. And if you know me, I'm not a dancer, but it was so incredible, I couldn't help myself. Another was the one that I just described to you. The third one was also another musical that I saw, where this was done by the same guy who wrote Hamilton, called In the Heights. And in this musical, I literally that night after the musical went home and wrote a list of, I think, 14 scenes that happened in that musical that had a kind of a transcendent, not transcendent, a universal connection for me. Like, all of us can relate to the family that is pinching their pennies so they can send their daughter off to college and then she fails and she comes home. All of us can relate to when grandma dies and she's the matriarch of the family and the whole community mourns. All of us can relate to the guy who won the lottery and he's torn now. Do I go to my dream destination where I can live out on a beach the rest of my life, or do I pour that money into my community here? Like, there were all these themes that happened. And I said, wow, that's incredible. How do we tell stories like that? How do we create that? But the truth is, you know, if I were to ask the 2,000 people, 1,800 people that came to our conference last week, if they had an experience like that, there are probably a few people that did. You know, the lady who won a free ticket to the conference at the end did. It wasn't because she won the free ticket. That was like the cherry on top. It was because the entire experience that she had took her from saying, you know what, I'm just another marketer, to saying, I've got something unique to share with the world and I need to go do it now. I need to not wait. So the conference had given her the confidence that she could step out, and getting that free ticket was just like the push over the edge of this is the time, go do it. So I think it is a religious experience in some kinds of ways. At a conference, it doesn't have to be religious, but I think when there's a spiritual component to it, it adds even a whole nother level of moment. And I think the reason it's important is I think that's the space where real change happens. So when all the external noise slows down, when we're not worried about what other people think, when we're given the space to dream about what could I really do in the world, or what would really be possible, and you're not worried about, you know, the next paycheck or what your boss thinks or anything else, all of a sudden that space was given to you as a gift to think about the bigger questions in life. And that's why I don't think they happen very often in life, but I think when they do happen, and when we have the chance to create it, and for me, it's success if it happened for a few people. If it happens for everybody at the event, that's amazing, but it's not.
Okay, this is rapid and fiery. You better stay both. Otherwise, I will have to shoot at you. Mother's best advice.
Mother's best advice. Don't try to do too much.
Alternate profession could have been?
Astronaut.
What would you do on Mars for fun?
Play golf.
As per your wife, your most often used phrase?
Be unforgettable.
Hey, one thing no one knows about you.
During college, I spent 7 months in Kenya. And while I was there, I went to a Maasai warrior camp and I put on snorkeling gear and took pictures in between two Maasai warriors.
Oh,
one of the dumbest things I've ever done.
Okay. Thanks for sharing. Okay. A book you'd like to gift to all your friends. It cannot be your own.
Fans First by Jesse Cole.
Okay. What would you tell your 18-year-old self?
You are a creative.
What's your favorite childhood memory?
Going to SeaWorld in San Diego.
Okay. What's your greatest joy?
My wife.
She has to listen to this, okay. How would you like strangers to remember you?
Kind, compassionate, and on purpose.
What is a lesson that took you a long time to learn?
To embrace who I am and be okay with that as a Swiss Army knife, not try to fit somebody else's mold.
So, Phil, thank you so much for coming over and really opening another portal for us to think new things about. And I just ask you, is there anything you would like to share about your book? Also, how can audiences reach you?
Yeah. Well, again, the book is called Unforgettable: The Art and Science of Creating Memorable Experiences. It's available anywhere in the world through Amazon or bookstores all over the world. I'd tell you to go to my website to get it, but unless you're in the United States, I can't ship it to you. But you can go to my website, philmershawn.com, and learn more about me. I'm available for speaking. I will have a course coming out later this year on creating memorable experiences, and love to connect, especially on LinkedIn and Facebook. Those are probably my two favorites, but I am on X and on Instagram and gradually accepting TikTok, although I'm not there very much yet. This is a great show because the questions that you ask are very thoughtful. Your preparation was excellent. I appreciate it because you ask things that no one else has asked me on the podcast that I've been on. So I appreciate it.
Yay! From one jagged edge to another, everyone stay jagged and pick up this book for creating unforgettable experiences. We need this all the time, actually, not just for marketing. Thank you, Phil. Take
Thank
care.
you. All right. Have a great day.